This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I got me 10 fine tones to voice, and we do this over Zoom, even okay. Though there's
this
a delay.
This is what we do, oh. And normally, like, we're in the studio together.
Yeah, and there's such an energy like you wouldn't believe. And we can do it at the same time. We can talk at the same time.
Everyone talks. We talk. You talk.
That's sort of the charisma.
If you're listening, you talk over us.
Is the appeal. Do you remember the Robert Altman movies from the 1970s?
If you have someone in the car with you, have a conversation with them while this is playing.
McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
The
sort of cocktail party sensation of a bunch of voices going at the same time. And yet you can focus on what you need to.
Shelley Duvall. Hello,
I'm Shelley Duvall.
Watch that video
on YouTube.
Crazy Larry, Dirty Mary.
Robert Altman.
Evans.
Have that at home.
Welcome to the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, guys. I'm Kevin.
If you listen to just mine, it never makes sense.
Yeah, that's like on Parenthood. We talked about that, right?
No.
Because on Parenthood, they would try to do the Altman thing where it's like, hey, Dax Shepard, why don't you do some improv? And if you listen to one person improvising while they're all overlapping, it never makes emotional sense, whatever they're saying on that show.
Well, they might be editing it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that might be
Dax,
true.
Dax Shepard, I will not hear a bad word against him. Just kidding. What if I was weirdly defending it?
Wait, can we get that picture of Kristen Bell posing with a bunch of cops giving the thumbs up a meme?
I don't want to. I just ate. okay. So, you know what? And I don't like Tom Holland. So,
it's true.
The backlash begins.
It's the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, guys. We're talking about episodes 405 and 406. And to do so...
Kevin, you've heard of Batman Begins? How about Backlash Begins? Okay.
Okay. Now, that's good. The Backlash Begins now. Yeah, there's the... It's less clean.
I love to do that.
And we do have to introduce our special guest before, you know, he's doing a little drop in at our gaslight that we call this podcast. So here's the guest intro music that we picked like 4 years ago for some reason.
I like it. Don't question yourself.
Yeah, it's fine. Friends and folks.
Do question yourself.
Everybody. Is this okay?
Fantastic song.
Stand-up comedian extraordinaire himself, sort of the Lenny Bruce of his time in more ways than one. Give it the hell up for Paul F. Tompkins. And to be clear, I'm saying the Lenny Bruce of his time, not in the sense of any drug use or
yeah, I didn't know what that meant.
But just
no, I've just been arrested many times.
Yeah, that's right.
For free speech.
For filth.
For free speech.
That's what I call a free speech, filth.
Yeah, that's filth
speech.
Abbreviation.
Right, filth speech.
Filth speech. Hi, I'm Phil Speech.
I'm Phil Speechter.
Come down to Phil Speech Dodge.
You guys know Phil Speech? Oh, how fun. Sorry we couldn't get him on this podcast, but we got PFT today. And that's nice. Paul, thanks for doing the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me. Please turn the music off. It was just going for a really long time.
It was going.
I know, it creates a sort of vibe.
We're sort of suspended in the mood of the music, and we can't like move on to talk normally. So we're just like, ha-ha, ha. And it's like... really stressful.
Well, to me, that part of the show is like that shot of in Goodfellas where they go into the nightclub, that long tracking shot. You're getting into the vibe of Maisel Goys, which is, and by the way, the vibe is us doing everything in our power not to talk about the show because it's a question of whether or not any of us like it at all anymore.
Well, I am definitely going to talk about the show. I'll just say that because full disclosure to the Audge, I texted you guys immediately after watching this episode of television and said, and you invited me on the show because
we're talking about 405 right now.
Yes.
405.
I found some problems with it that I thought were like, I think were like irresponsible. I've watched every episode of this show. I am current with the show. Watched it since the beginning. I think it is. Well, it's like,
yeah,
it's a, it's so nice to look at. Like, the production value is off the charts.
Sumptuous.
You gotta love Shalhoub and Hinkle, right? Mm-hmm. You gotta love them. There's so much. I love watching them. I could use more of them in the show.
Or just them?
Spinoff? I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't
Same production
say no.
value, just that.
Absolutely.
Wait, so Alice, your solution after all these seasons is more of the parents and the in-laws on this show rather than the world
of
the...
Well, if the parents were and the in-laws of the show were just the... That was who it was about, and it was like a nice,
if
like...
the percentages were shifted, if it was 90% the parents and the in-laws and 10% the young people, I wouldn't say no to that show.
The young people.
But then we probably have to deal with... We'd have to have a lot of Ethan.
Who's that again?
Exactly.
One of the children, one of her unseen children.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I love that every once in a while they drop in a thing, like a parenting thing. Like, I'm toilet training my child. Like, are you really?
Yeah. It makes me tired.
When are you there?
Now, this is an interesting pitch that Paul has where it like becomes a reverse Law and Order, where famously on that show, you never go home with the detectives.
Yes,
you never really see their home life. So what if this show is just entirely Midge hanging out at home and she's like, I got to go do my set. And then you just never see her there.
Yeah.
And it's just a home life
show. And it's
show.
The parents talk about how that affects them that she's doing this. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We see more of Abe at the Village Voice. We see more of, which is kind of, they're giving us a little bit of that, but I want more.
Okay.
Interesting pitch.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. Are these waters for everyone?
These waters are for everyone. Yeah, you can take one if you want.
And who validates? Is it the person that I saw outside?
We all, I can, it doesn't really matter. They don't check it.
It's fair.
Honestly, they don't check it. You can leave and
That's
they don't check
tip.
It.
That's a good tip.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And as a stand, I mean, other than what we've texted about, my only knowledge of what... of what you felt about the show. I think Alice did ask you if you wanted to be involved in one of our live shows like 2 or 3 years ago, and your immediate response was absolutely not.
Yeah. So strong. Like, it came faster than the text was finished being asked.
And also, I think there was another layer on that, is that people were doing characters.
Not at this show. Well,
wait,
maybe.
No, that's not true. It was the one at the typewriter. So yeah, there were characters.
Yeah, we just call it the typewriter now, by the way. It's not Dynasty Typewriter.
I love it.
I think Alice did Sophie, right?
Yes, you did.
I did Sophie. Well, I dressed as her, though. I didn't like do
No, you did. You did a set. No, you did a set
I did?
As her. Yeah.
As Sophie?
Yeah, you did.
Both of you have terrible memories, but together you put it all into the same night.
I'm freaked out right now.
No, you did it. And then you did a straight set, Alice, and then Demi did a set, and then I tried to do a set. It was okay. It was
I think that
good.
Was 4 years ago, though. I think it was like during season one.
It was 2018, I believe. 2018 or 2019.
Is that four years ago?
2019 is 3 years ago at this point, if my math's not off.
And you said 2018.
Yes.
Which would be 4 years ago?
Yes.
So then when I said 4 years ago, that was correct.
No, but I'm saying I said 2018. Erroneously, it was 2019. Now that
I didn't even hear you say 2018, so who cares?
Well, listeners, you can relitigate this in the comments yourself.
I'm very sorry that I'm being so combative. I think I'm riled up from this episode of television that I saw.
Well, it's also this hour of the day. It's just peak aggression hour.
Okay, all right,
10 a.m.
Calm down. But you know what? I wanted to get stuff done today.
I'm not blaming you.
Why couldn't this be one of the things, but later?
Because if I schedule something important late in the day, I don't do anything until then.
I hear that.
You
hear
think
that.
I'm important?
Aww.
That's really nice.
Yeah, if this is my thing that I do, I prepare for that, but then I don't do anything else. I don't get to the gym. Mm-hmm. I don't get to, you know? And
I
so this
you.
Means that after I go to back to sleep after this... because I couldn't sleep last night.
That's one of the things I have to do. I have to go to sleep.
Oh, gang. I was up till 4:15 a.m. this morning.
No,
that's not
why?
A joke.
Kevin.
I'll tell you off mic. I can't tell you on mic.
Were you in the ice cream lab? You discovered a new flavor?
I wish that was the case.
Were you maybe taking a look off the peak at Fuck Mountain?
Oh, a callback to a bit that happened off mic, famously.
It's not even that much of a callback. It's just a really fucked up thing
it's
to
just,
say.
It's just you said Fuck Mountain.
So, Paul, what did you think of the episode, really?
Yeah, this is episode 405. We're talking about how to chew quietly and influence people. And it premiered, you know, March 3rd, 2022.
Do you want to do the cultural, the thing that we do before he says his piece? Because it might jog his memory.
Would that be helpful?
No memory jog needed. I remember everything.
Okay.
Well, because on this show, famously, we cover two episodes at a time. So when we do our little pop culture supercut, it's for both of them.
You do a PCSC?
We do a PCS, yeah, as it's tradition for the last, yes, PCSC, excuse me, has been tradition for the last 8 years or so.
Well, then I would say take it away.
You think take it away because, okay, take it away, because Paul hasn't seen 206 yet, have you?
406?
406?
I believe we watched it last night.
Yeah, that's the one where she does warm-up for Sophie. You watch that one?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so 4 or 5.
So I don't think we should do the supercut until Paul leaves.
No, go ahead. I don't know. Honestly, you can spoil it. You can spoil the whole rest of the season for me. That's
fine. I think we should spend the rest of our time with Paul litigating whether or not we should play.
Okay, perfect. Good suggestion.
Now we'll just play
pros.
This is 405, 406. This is a little segment that we call
12 o'clock rock. We're going to
pop
around
the culture
tonight.
And here we go. It's every pop culture reference in the episode. I'm forgetting Paul's never heard
Please
this.
Please play it again for me.
Oh, sure.
12 o'clock, rock, we're going to
pop
around
the culture
tonight.
And you're not going to believe this, but
culture.
That is me singing. And not at all testing the limits of my range.
It's very, as someone who has overdubbed a song with one word,
mm-hmm.
I know it's very difficult to do and it's a pain to edit.
Wait, what was the song and what was the word?
I famously did a version of the Mank themes trailer with the Flash Gordon theme song.
<That's funny. laughs>
And just saying the word Mank where they said Flash.
Mank! Whoa! Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's great.
That does sound hard.
All right, here's pop around the culture for this for these two episodes.
Shy's going to be the lead in Billy Wilder's next film.
You punched Olivia de Havilland.
She had it coming.
You punched Humphrey Bogart.
Cried harder than Olivia.
The woman owns a Chanel sleep mask.
All this because I cracked a couple Judy Garland jokes at the Apollo?
Jerry Lewis wasn't invited either. It makes you feel any better.
Princess Grace is here. Did you see her?
It's my good friend, Mr. Harry Belafonte.
When I went to a bullfight with Hemingway...
It's Sidney Poitier. He's talking to a Harvey from the movie. Harvey was the rabbit, but that is Jimmy Stewart. Oh my.
Kennedy Nixon, Peter Pan collar thing.
Frank Sinatra wrote a song about you.
False, but it is true that I am a tramp.
I live in a Dr. Seuss book.
I've been on Sullivan 9 times.
This shit has to be what killed Toulouse Lautrec.
She had sex with Cubby O'Brien.
Narrowed it down to either Betty Davis or Rock Hudson.
Eddie Fisher's gonna explain himself.
I don't know, ask Sigmund fucking Freud.
Thought I'd offer her to you before I go to Jack Paar.
Personal best, but it was James Joyce, so I was very nervous. I was transcribing Finnegan's Wake.
Lenny Riefenstahl demanding my pants.
I won the Maitre Beau's amateur.
You're the poor man's Mort Saul.
Orson Welles took me to lunch.
Oscar Levant. Trisha Highsmith modeled every psycho and every book after.
Ready for some Proust.
Mickey Rooney and the frozen banana.
10 minutes on how Stalin likes his steak.
Will Chamberlain couldn't see over that thing.
When that red light goes on, it means the Russians are invading.
Pop culture reference to the war.
Oh my God. To the war.
That last one. It's a reference to the Russian invasion of the Ukraine.
Pop culture.
Yeah. Isn't that pop?
Newly relevant. Isn't that pop? Isn't that culture?
Yeah, you know, you got Oscar Levant in there. You got freaking a lot of name checks. A lot of name checks this season.
One of the worst Alfred Hitchcock impressions I've ever seen.
That was interesting, right? When they had the guy playing Alfred Hitchcock
the egg,
and the Gordon Ford.
Yeah. Hard-boiled egg.
A hard-boiled egg. That's not what Alfred Hitchcock sounded like. Alfred Hitchcock is one of those default impressions that anyone knows what it sounds like. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
It would be more like a hard-boiled egg.
I believe you that's good.
It didn't sound like Truman Capote. Yeah.
Hard boiled egg.
There you go. That's a little Alan Rickman.
Mr. Potter, do you want a hard boiled egg? Yeah, I hear
what
that.
What a hard boiled egg.
Psycho. Mr. Potter, are you psycho?
Psycho killer, Mr. Potter.
Cascassin.
Mr. Potter, I'd be careful taking a shower.
And rip to Mr. Rickman, who would have been great on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel if he
Oh, can you imagine? Who would bum you out the most to see on this show?
Well, I would say probably Michael B. Jordan.
Can you imagine?
That's a good one.
Well, they already had Sterling K. Brown. There's more middle initials to go around, I suppose.
Yeah,
yeah,
true.
There's more middle. Anybody with a middle initial.
Well, not anybody, because I auditioned to play Gordon Ford and did not get it.
Wait, can you talk about that? I was going to ask if I'm sure y'all have gone up for stuff for this show.
I have not.
It was during quarantine, mm-hmm. and I got the audition, and I was like, okay, good. It was, of course, also, this is due tomorrow. And it's like, the show is fast-paced, blah, blah, blah. It's one of those auditions where they give you a note on how to audition. And so, you know, I gave it a shot, and I thought I did a good job. But when I saw the guy that they cast, I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, yeah, that's... You get that guy.
Reed Scott from...
Why, I never should have been auditioning for that.
It didn't seem like he was very fast-paced, though.
No.
Like, his thing was super not fast-paced. Like, they wanted him to be, like, a commercially...
Absolutely. And I feel like that made more sense because that's how that show would go. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be like, blah, 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 blah. And so when I saw it, I was like, oh, first of all, I forgot that I auditioned for it.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, yeah, right. And when I saw the guy, I was like, yeah, it should, of course, it should be him. I never should have gotten that audition.
And when you saw that and you remember that you auditioned and didn't get the part, unfortunately, that's when you said, finally, I can go on the podcast and speak my piece.
Yes.
That was the kind of the last piece
of what you needed, yeah.
But also seeing this episode, I really feel like I'm even more, I'm glad I didn't get it because this episode of Maisel was, there's something that happened in this episode that has been, we've been sort of leading up to it. It's been, you know, the thing between her and Shia Baldwin, her getting fired.
Yep.
And so Janie, my wife, and I were watching the episodes this season. And anytime they mention Shia Baldwin and she's so mad, we would always say to each other, like, but wait, didn't she like do something terrible? And that's why she got fired? Like, this is weird. Like, does she not remember that she did this?
Mm-hmm. Hundo P.
And so then they get invited to Shia Baldwin's wedding. And
which they're very mad about. They're very mad about getting invited to a
wedding. They're mad they got invited. They're so mad they go. They're like, they're trying to wreak like small havoc at the wedding. They're the ordering havoc. Weird combinations of drinks that somehow that gets him. I don't know. And then they're knocking down trays and shit like that. And so it leads up to this confrontation where Midge goes into the bathroom to confront Shia Baldwin.
I believe we have a clip.
Yeah, please.
What I would have said if I'd gotten on the plane.
Something about winged monkeys.
I would have said that I fucked up. Like, I've never fucked up anything in a life not without its fuck-ups. I would have said I was scared off my ass getting on that stage. And Mom's Mabley went on before me.
Yeah, it's hard to follow Mom's.
I was desperate for that laugh. I was desperate to just go out there and kill. I just thought, hometown crowd, talk about shy. So I did. And I did kill, which was my job. But I should have gone in a different direction. Shy gives a lot of money to abused children. In other words, he pays his staff. Before every concert, Shy spends half an hour going, me, 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 and then he starts his vocal exercises. Shy doesn't think he's God's gift to the world, but he does call his suits his wrapping paper.
I get it.
You are a treasure trove of punchlines. But I never would have hurt you. Not on purpose, not for anything in the world. I thought we were friends. And I take my friendships very seriously.
All right.
Okay, Here's all my points.
Okay.
This has been coming for a while. And, you know, so as this is happening, I'm thinking, okay, I can't wait to hear Shia Baldwin's response to her because it's going to be like a real moment of comeuppance for this character, the main character on the show, who is, you know, starting out, doesn't know things, whatever. She's like learning and she's got to take her lumps, right? The fact that his response is so cowed and like that he feels bad, that he fucked up somehow, is like this not just systemically privileged, but literally privileged white lady who has fucking outed this black man in the fucking 60s in front of a room full of people, and she gets fired. And then we're led to believe that if her standpoint is we're friends, how could you do this to me? Did she ever reach out to him? If she knows that she fucked up, right? She knows that she did something that was so terrible. Did she ever call him? Did she ever write to him? There's no reference to that whatsoever. He did something that he had every right to do and is completely right to do. absolutely fuck yeah. you, lady. Who do you fucking think you are? Not only am I your boss and I'm a bigger star than you, like everything about this, I'm in my rights to fire you.
Everything.
But you violated my privacy in such a fucked up way because you were scared? Fuck you. Like, it's beyond insane
yeah.
that it's even questioned what he does. But then to have it written that he ends up sort of tacitly apologizing to her and wants to, and then he goes like, let's hang out again sometime. And she's like, fuck, no, I message received. How dare you even suggest such a thing? And I'm going to call you by your real name. Like the most tone deaf thing. And guess what? If you're going to be anachronistic throughout this series, be anachronistic and have her get her fucking comeuppance from this gay black man who is just trying to fucking survive and have a life. Like, who are you to yell at him? I couldn't believe it. And it's like the expectation that was built up in my mind of like, here's what's going to happen. And then not only did that not happen, but the complete opposite thing happens. I was flabbergasted. Like it legit made me angry. And I can't believe I have not like heard about it. You know what I mean? Like people aren't talking about it, that it was not like, you know, on Twitter or whatever, like a thing. Like this is a fucked up moment of television.
Well, and I think it would have been if it existed in one of these.
Thank you for letting me rant, by the way.
I have I had a like a cheering section, but it's not playing for some reason.
Oh, Alex is busting out her soundboard.
And you know what? If you can't find the sound effect, it's good to mention
you couldn't
find it.
Just let us know what you would have played.
Oh, here's why. Okay. There we go.
No, we don't hear anything right now.
There we go indeed, Alice.
I heard it.
Well, that's great. I think, Paul, if it was one of these shows that existed in that HBO like Sunday night slot where everyone has gotten a little brain poisoned of, hey, guess what? Undoing sucks, but you're going to watch it every Sunday for six weeks, you know. And if it was more of a sort of discourse center, then it would be. But season four of any show, especially this sort of show where it's like, oh, yeah, Amazon Prime still doing a lot of stuff, I guess. It just is.
No, but it's season four of, I mean, season four of Succession is a talking point.
Yeah.
Or will be.
Yeah, season.
But that's an HBO show.
This show is so clearly so expensive. So expensive. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's like all this money is lavished on it and it's not like part of the discourse is an amazing illustration of how much shit is out there right now. And it's kind of, which I think is kind of wonderful, because when I see somebody say, hey, season five of the Escape Artist or whatever is back, I can't wait. And I'm like, I've never heard of this show.
Is that a
I love it.
Good for
I love
you
it
people.
Too.
That it's like, hey, we great to hear from all the fans. Like, I've never heard of this fucking show, but these people are thriving.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be, I think when you look back on this moment in whatever you want to call it, peak TV or whatever the case may be, like 15 or 20 years from now.
Teak PV.
Teak PV. When you look back on this moment of Teak PV.
Some letters might get inverted in the alphabet.
Yeah, and that's going to be its legacy.
In the year 2000.
Right, fun.
Or are you trying to do an effect?
play the sound.
Yeah, do it. Find the sound, Alice. Play the sound, Alice.
Actually, I figured out how to make it so you can hear it.
Great. That's great.
There's the cheering. Oh, that's so nice. But it will be this sort of, I think it will be looked back on like, oh, those are the halcyon days of streamers were going fucking nuts because they were so cash rich.
Yeah.
That Apple just made 30 shows that no one watched except for Ted Lasso, I guess.
Yeah.
And some of Severance. And Amazon, they just poured a fuck ton of money into five seasons of this show that got a lot of Emmys in its first season and had some sort of discourse. But then I think especially the 2-year COVID gap in between seasons, everyone's like, what?
Oh, yeah.
What's going on with this?
Yeah, that was shocking to me. I was telling Kevin early in this podcast, like, that was shocking to me that they were just like, we start the episode And I'm like, okay, what's going on? They're going to address it, right? It's been 2 years. Right. Like, we're going to, like, do something with that. The fact that no one knows what's going on at all.
Yeah.
And they just were like, anyway, it's revenge. And I'm like, for what? What's happening? Like, they just didn't try
not even
at all.
A cute little reference to COVID
not
or something.
Not even a cute.
Yeah.
A cute reference or to at least how long it's been.
Oh,
or
that's so
not
cute.
Even, I didn't need a reference, but like just a little expositional work. Like yeah, on their part. They're
absolutely.
Like, no, we're good.
Yeah.
Hopefully this will be a very unique problem for this batch of shows. You know how like everyone's always going to remember forever the movies that
Titans?
Were in movie theaters?
Oh.
No, the movies that were in movie theaters like February and March of 2020. Everyone's going to have a memory of like, oh yeah, the last one I saw was Sonic or whatever the case may be before lockdown started. Like that batch of movies is going to like be ingrained as almost a trigger in people's minds for so long.
Yeah. Oof.
In the same way, there's going to be this very unique thing with a certain batch of TV shows where, oh, Better Call Saul, the gap between seasons 5 and 6 was 2 years, 2.5 years. Succession was 2 years. Maisel was 3 years technically because it ended in 2019 and then came back in 2022. So in between that. So it's going to be a very unique phenomenon that it's this large of a gap, and it is gonna, I think, affect the way that we watch it. But yes, it is a little crazy making. But Paul, to your point about the sort of ideology that this show is positing in this way, one of our listeners flagged something in an interview with ASP, Amy Sherman Palladino. She said it was time for Midge to learn about the true driving force in the creative process. And this is her just talking about the season as a whole. Learn about the true driving force in the creative process, which is anger and revenge. It's the only reason there is Hollywood or show business. We all want to get back at somebody and make them pay. So this is...
I hate stuff like that so much. It bums
it's
me
so
out.
It's so cynical, yeah. And it's not at all what anybody else thinks.
No, it's like, it's such a fake, pithy take. It's like hacky. You know what I mean? It's like... Mm-hmm. It feels familiar. It feels like this is a joke that everybody knows, and so I'll make the joke, and that somehow reinforces the joke because everyone already knows this joke. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I'm going to make a really stretchy, gooey like connection here, but I hope that you follow me down this road.
Did you say this connection will be dewy?
Dewy and gooey.
Dewy, gooey, and Louie.
It's gross. So I started off in improv and went to stand up after that. And Paul, you like did the reverse, right? You went to, you ended up in improv, which makes total sense to me.
TPV.
Because when I started out in improv, it was full of like 150 extremely like gung-ho, loud, obnoxious theater kids and like 4 comedians.
Right.
That's what it was when I started out. And it was just like absolutely insufferable being around this many people who would not stop with this fucking farce that they were all had each other's backs. It drove me crazy. Mm-hmm. It was just like this energy of like constant like, yay, yeah, you, yeah, you, yeah, you. Oh, somebody else got on a Herald team. Yay. It was just like, nobody could act. It was awful. Mm-hmm. And then I went to stand up and it was just like this energy of like, hey, fuck you. Like everybody was right. Like people would say it to your face. I don't think you're good enough to get that because that was like the worst thing they thought about that person. And then we'd all go drink together because we did actually support each other and we're like a community. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like everything was there. There was no backstabbing. It was only front stabbing, you know, and it was from the stage.
You started in New York.
I started in New York, so that's not true of LA at all.
Important to note.
Important distinction.
Or most places.
Or most places. But New York for a while, I think probably only when I was starting, it just randomly because of who was in the scene, had this vibe of like outright, like everybody said what they thought and people, it was momentarily a true meritocracy because even if you were the dumbest person, you know, like you looked crazy, you'd come up on stage, there'd be like 4 seconds where people would actually listen to your writing. Anyway, so to me, that's the thing that has been bothering me about this show this whole time. It's a show about stand-up written by theater kids who like don't understand they keep talking about what it is to be a comic. And it's like, no, you don't know it on a intellectual level. You don't know it on a fundamental, like, camaraderie level. Yeah. You don't know anything about being a stand-up because your whole thing is like, a secretly pissed off theater kid. Like, and that's not what this is about. That's not what the motivating factor of a New York comic is.
I think it's also, I agree with that. And I also, the thing that's frustrating to me about the stand-up is not so much, I look, it's hard to write stand-up for an ongoing series, right? It's difficult to do. And I think that all in all, they do an okay job. The thing that really always lets down stand-up on TV, in movies, when you see it depicted dramatically, is audience reaction. They don't know where to put laughs. They don't know when when laughs are sustained
really
or small or whatever. The movie I saw where I think they did it the best was The Big
Joker.
Sick. Like, where they really paid attention to the ebb and flow of audience reaction was depicted the best that I've ever seen. But the thing that bothers me about Maisel with her stand-up is she should be bombing a lot more. She should be she shouldn't be written about in the newspaper. Do you know what I mean?
Like, it is so funny that she is like
so bizarre.
She's essentially the status of a socialite, just going by by the press coverage that she's constantly getting.
Yeah.
The feuds with Sophie Lennon, the L. Ron Hubbard covering her in the press, or whatever the person's name is.
L. Ron.
Or whatever.
The great Hari Neff. It was a treat to see
her. Yes.
Oh, that was amazing.
But yeah, it's like the idea that, and she's working at this strip club. It's like, I don't understand where her, where she is career-wise.
Yes,
because
exactly.
The storytelling bothers me so much because it's like, it seems like she's doing great. Like, I don't understand why this one thing, like if she's as famous now as Shy Baldwin, like what's going on?
Yeah.
Like the news would be out. She'd be recognized. Like, she's a very specific looking person. She would be recognized on the street. Like people would be saying, what fucking Mrs. Maisel is at the strip club?
And some people do.
Yes.
Like some people do. And then it doesn't make rhyme or reason why they do and why they don't.
Yeah.
Like I feel like on this show, it would justify, they would just like have something like Jimmy Stewart would come up to her and go,
hey, are you Mrs. Maisel?
I've heard of you, Mrs. Maisel. And everybody would be like, ha ha ha, sure.
You're Mrs. Maisel. You're that dirty comedian.
Yeah, but then for some reason, the mom.
I'm doing old Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, Jimmy, you look like shit. What's the.
The mom who's doing the like matchmaking, her clients won't know.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't make any it's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And it feels to me it infuriates me because, and we've talked about this, Kevin and I, on this show so much about how the stand-up is the incongruity of like the stand-up and how it works. And it infuriates me because it's like, okay, what the Amy Sherman-Palladino is capable of so much. And it's not like she's a lazy writer, but this is so lazily done. And it feels like the people they're hiring who are stand-ups, they're just not listening to them and they won't because they want to do their thing their own way.
I think that's probably true. Yeah.
And it just makes the show so much worse to me because it's just like, okay, well, I can't root for somebody if I don't know what the fuck is going on with them.
Yeah.
And if they're going to have a huge mistake that they make, I need the show to understand that she made that mistake, but the show doesn't get it. They don't know that she made the mistake that she just actually made.
Yeah.
The show, the people who drive in the bus don't know.
Yeah.
They're just like, they're like the thing that people hate about white feminists is what this show is.
They're thinking about these moments and imagining how great these moments are going to be, but they're not thinking about how it fits into a story, how it resonates with the people that are watching it. It's just like, wouldn't it be great if Midge says all this stuff? And it's like, well, maybe, but that's not your only recourse. Like you could have something else happen, you know, just because you get it in your head that this would be great doesn't mean it actually is great. Like I it feels like somebody has this fully formed in their mind, you know, and like, I got to see it come to life. And it's like, no, it's the wrong call here.
It's inflexible.
Like when Lenny Bruce, like waking up from the hangover and she's like, I didn't know you had a daughter. Why didn't you ever tell me that? He's like, because we're comics. And it's like,
no,
it's because he's a shitty dad. That's why he never told her. He's like a terrible father.
Yeah. Speaking the secret language.
That's something Midge could point out. we could have that be, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
a perspective, but Midge isn't enough of a fully formed character.
Do you know what else? It's a show that I think the downfall of the show really is that it
didn't cast you. It didn't cast you as
it
Gordon
didn't
Ford.
Cast you.
That's the downfall. Of the
I would have turned
me.
It around.
It'd be amazing if we got there somehow. Like, and we're like, God. It is.
Wow.
They chose a time period that they are not willing or equipped to address. All the stuff that's happening. They pay like tiny lip service nods to it every once in a while, but they are not the people ultimately they are not the people to tell this story.
That's a really good point.
You know?
Not in 2020, not in 2022.
Not in 2023.
No. Not in 2023 too.
Not in 2021.
Or 2024? Maybe.
2022. Oh, 2024, everything is when
it will
we
be
get
an election year.
2024, they're going to get there.
Yeah, I hope so. But thankfully, for a storyline like this with Shia Baldwin and the intersection of queer identity, they did make a choice to have a half black writing staff. Oh, wait, I'm getting word there's literally no people of color on the writing staff.
I thought there was one sad person there who was like,
yeah.
I hate it here. I may need to fact check that. That may be wrong.
This will lead to something else.
Please get me off this show.
But at least for the credit writer. So, this is thus far the only episode not credited to one of the Paladinos. It was credited to a woman named Kate Fedor, who's a playwright. And I did assume, because of the content of the episode, that she would be a person of color. And she's not. She's a white lady. But yeah.
But I would imagine, I don't know this for sure.
Yeah, but I'm a white lady, and I know and understand how, like, right and wrong works.
Yeah. But I feel like this is probably one of those shows where the scripts definitely go through a Paladino, rewrite, one of those kind of shows where it's like,
yeah, that's how my show works.
What's your show?
Resident Alien.
They go through a Paladino rewrite on Resident
Alien.
Yeah,
you call
really
that your show? Resident Alien. It's great, by the way. You know, I'm a fan.
I know you're a fan. Thank you.
Love it.
Yeah. Chris Sheridan, the showrunner, like every writer, the writers go through their show and then he goes through his rewrite. And then there's the Paladino rewrite, which is dreaded because it ruins a lot of what he does.
Because some shows like the showrunner will not necessarily tweak it from top to bottom, And I think this show, because there's such a specific Paladino voice, that of course it goes through the Paladino machine.
Of anger and vengeance, evidently.
Yeah. But that's fine if they're like, but I don't think that would make them responsible for story points such as,
true,
yes, white women's mentality, like white women should be centered in literally every single story, no matter what.
They could be, though, because when the episodes are pitched, when the storylines are pitched, I mean, of course they're going to have like a very strong idea of what Midge's journey is and what she goes through.
Right. Like, it's possible that somebody pitched like, and then Scott, Shy gives her a piece of his mind. And they're like, no, maybe not.
She's kind of not allowed to be wrong.
Yep. She's not allowed to be wrong.
She's not allowed to be wrong.
Yeah.
Which is like, who wants to watch that character? You know what I mean? When every other character is bending to her will, like, no, you know what, Midge? You're right again.
Well, it's Don Draper. But it's like, so go ahead and do it. Make that character. Do that character. Also, but you got it. One thing you need to be careful of when you're writing that character, don't have her do 17 wrong things an episode.
And be justified.
Don't have her do like objectively bad wrong things all the time.
Yeah, and like Paul's saying, like they contextualize Draper on Mad Men where it's like, no, it's like a piece of shit guy that you're watching.
This guy's
right
a sociopath.
Now. Yeah.
And I made a lot of I made a lot of noise on the first season of this show.
You just made a noise right there.
How exciting it was for me watch a flailing antihero be a lady. You know, luck be a lady tonight. And this
luck be a flailing antihero tonight.
But I don't know if the Paladinos would call this an anti-hero. I think they would just say our hero who gets in some scrapes.
Right. That's the problem. I thought season one, I was like, here we go. I thought for sure. I was like, in season one, I was like, for sure. It's going to be an anti-hero. We get to see a real arc. And then after watching seasons two, three, and four, I was like, oh, they might think she's just a regular hero.
She doesn't even have to be an anti-hero, but just be like a regular human being who sometimes makes mistakes, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah. And people aren't like, you know what? It's okay that you made the mistake. Actually, I was wrong in my reaction to your mistake.
Yeah.
That's bananas.
Yeah, that's bananas. It's really fucked up and not helpful to a character that's trying to grow and change if they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we've seen this character now for like countless hours of TV. And
I can
we
count
would
them.
Like a little... Yo, yeah.
I think they're literally countable.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is a unique countless hours. I think off the top of my head, it is 36 hours.
Oh, God, that's a lot of time.
What if there are secret hours of Maisel that cannot be counted?
Ooh, drop the Palladino cut.
We only find out when we get to heaven.
Heaven.
Hey, now you're speaking my language.
Speaking of going to heaven.
Yeah, Paul's got to go to podcast heaven and die.
I got to go to podcast heaven. I got to go there to die.
Listen, Paul, we love you. Thanks for doing the show.
I love you guys. It was so great to see you.
Thank
you
for
having me on the show. My microphone came off Freddie Mercury style. I'm just going to hold it like this.
It's like his Live Aid set, but podcast-wise. Oh, my God.
But thank you so much for having me. It was
cathartic.
Yes. Thank you to talk about that because it really did bother me. I really thought it was irresponsible and kind of shitty. So
I'm
thank
really
you.
Glad you were here to say this stuff because I don't know that it would have gotten said in such a wonderfully eloquent way without you. So
Alice, you're going to turn my head.
And listen, anytime you're mad about anything, you come on this show and you always got a place and platform.
Not even about the
not
show,
about
but it could
Maisel.
Be anything.
Just
okay,
about
great.
Like, yeah, traffic or
yeah.
something a friend did.
And now you have the Zoom. It's the same link every time. So you could just bust in if you know we're recording.
Oh, shit. You guys? Fucked up. So I'm just going to randomly click on it. I don't know when you're recording.
Yeah.
Well, we got one more next week. So yeah. thank you.
All right. We'll find out.
You got to find out when it is.
Well, guys, thank you so much. It was so lovely to see both of you.
Oh, it was such
you
a blast.
Too, sir.
Have fun talking about 406.
Goodbye. Thank you and good night.
Thank you and good night.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, unlike anything I've ever talked about on the air, I actually stand by Squarespace. I actually do because I've used it for everything I've made. Literally, GilmoreGuysShow.com, the very website for this very podcast, was made using Squarespace. How beautiful is that? KevinTPorter.com, I made that using Squarespace. My old bake shop website, that was made using Squarespace. Because you can do it all with Squarespace. You can sell content on your website. So exclusive stuff behind a paywall. You can sell memberships, courses, or sell files your customers can download like PDFs, music, or eBooks. You can do that with Squarespace. You can do analytics with Squarespace. So you can figure out who's visiting your website and why. And figure out how to get traffic and where's it coming from. You can also have people do flexible payments on Squarespace. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accepts credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. How nice is that? You can also do email campaigns, so there's constant outreach for your stuff and people know where to find you. So I'm gonna let you know where to find Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, now we can actually talk. I love this show. This episode's great. Paul's wrong.
I thought he was so wrong.
He was out
he
of
was
his
so
cord.
Off base. Oh my God, did you hear? Oh, the arrogance.
The arrogance this has.
I'm really glad he came here to say that because I was like, Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's nice to have a different voice be mad on our behalf.
It is. It's such a relief.
Well, here's what it is, Alice. It's such a relief. Like, this is the confirmation.
We've been mad for so long.
Yeah, and maybe we should have smelled this with Gilmore Girls, A Year in the Life. Maybe we should have smelled it in Maisel seasons 1, 2, 3, or 4. But this is truly the confirmation of the sort of nihilistic POV of Amy Sherman Palladino.
Yep.
That vengeance and anger is so much not even the undercurrent motivation of a lot of the things that she does, where it's like, oh, if you rewatch Gilmore, it's actually pretty catty in these very dark ways, but that it is fundamental to a worldview.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In the same way, correct, that Aaron Sorkin wrote a TV show about a TV writer named Matt Albee on the TV show Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, who dates a Christian comedian played by Sarah Paulson called Harriet Hayes, who's based on Kristen Chenoweth. This show does feel like, in essence, what I should have said and what other people should have said to me is this.
Right.
The fantasy element where the heights of your imagination with lavish production design and wonderful music is still...
And that actually sounds like a show that would be really interesting if it was written with self-awareness of what it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that sucks. And this is brings me back to the theater kid mentality. There's this like... It's not just theater. It's like there is this like this obnoxious sort of like type of person who is unaware of like who doesn't have the self-awareness to understand when they're being obnoxious and when they're creating havoc and when they're like making things harmful for other people. Like it just doesn't, they're just not, there's just no awareness. I don't know what, you know, like that feels like, I feel like I'm starting to get a pretty good idea of like, you know, what this person is about.
Or what working on a show like this is like, honestly. Because every show is a show about whatever the show is about, but every show is also a documentary about the people making it.
Right.
And this is a pretty telling documentary thus far.
Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating. Let me do the little dinky Amazon Prime synopses. 405, how to chew quietly and influence people. Susie hones her managerial style. Rose's professional skills land her an incredible opportunity. Midge and Susie take advantage of some high society perks. 406, Maisel versus Lennon, the cut contest. Word of Midge's act is spreading. Imogen gets a new job and a new name. Sophie just wants help. Okay, these are like hilariously opaque sort of synopses. But yes, 405 starts or continues the great Gilmore reunion of season 4 with a little gentleman we like to call Max Madee's Nuts! Mr. Scott Cohen. Alice, did you not realize who that was?
No!
That's Max Madee's Nuts! Wait, for real?
As who?
So Scott Cohen on this show, let me get the
who's Scott Cohen?
Scott Cohen is the actor who plays Max Medina.
Okay. Go on.
So he plays the sort of high society wealthy man whose name is escaping me right now. I'm trying to find it.
Melamed.
Yes, Peter Melamed. Solomon Melamed. So he is Solomon the high Melamed. Society
what
person.
A fun name to say.
Yeah, I'm sure they had fun writing that. But
he's Solomon Melamed?
Yes, the man who hires Rose in her matchmaking capacity.
That guy was kind of...
Yeah,
okay.
He can still get it.
I mean, Max Madee's Nuts.
He was a little cutie pie on Gilmore, and he's still a good looking
man. Oh my God, Max Madee's Nuts.
He's aged pretty...
I fucking love you.
But yes... Scott Cohen as Solomon Melamed, the wealthy man who's trying to get his quote unquote old homely daughters married.
That is so weird, right? How weird was that?
I think the contextualization of the way they're playing that storyline is, isn't it regressive that these people think that 31 and 32 is a really old age for someone to be single? Because Rose gasps at that idea, like, oh, they're so old. He's like, yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's a
right.
bunch of old, ugly
but
people.
But also, he was like, my kid, like my daughter's ugly, and also she got kicked in the head by a horse, and so she doesn't like do math good or something. It's just like,
yeah, there's some,
whoa.
There's some dark stuff like, there that I don't
so
want to interrogate too much. But overall,
right.
like, the... It leads to some, obviously, some juicy stuff in 406, especially for me.
Yeah.
But But the feeling of this and the kind of conflict, Rose is working for this high society man who desires, you know, a clean reputation above all and above the board, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right,
right. So Midge doing an act at a strip club is a problem. We're just doing it all again, man. Like season four, it's
not even,
like, so it's this and it's Rose being like, you need to give this up because of society. And again, in 405 and 406, I am flabbergasted, mm-hmm. Alice Wetterlin.
Yeah, he is.
That we're doing Sophie Lennon again, where it's like, oh, Sophie kind of gives Midge a shot, and then Midge embarrasses her. We're doing that again?
Yep.
That's the point of season four? This is what, and maybe I'm being ungracious. It's a fucking COVID thing. They had all these other plans, and there was actor availability or travel or some shit.
That's the most generous I could be. Out.
But it is absolutely wild to me that this is what the time is being chosen to spend on.
For sure.
I truly couldn't believe it. Because the only person kind of like...
Susie.
Yeah, exactly, Susie. The only person kind of following an arc of progress that's trackable in this not regressive, not frustrating, running in circles, chasing your own tail sort of way across the four seasons is Susie. Susie's...
You can tell that when ASP's writing this whole show... You can watch the moments that she sort of stops caring about everybody else but Susie.
I think so. There's a good argument to be made for that.
Yeah.
And
Susie's the most interesting character to her. She doesn't care about anybody else.
And she does. And I know it's like fun to joke about, but the way they're framing it, she does feel like the main character on this
Which
show.
Which I'm fine
now.
With.
It's so
honestly.
Odd.
I'm still going to watch just for Susie.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like... I'm watching at this point, and I think a lot of the listeners will agree. I'm watching for Susie's arc and for Midge's hats. Like, you know what I mean? I'm watching for Susie's arc and for Midge to like kiss Lenny Bruce, kiss Boise. I just want to see, you know, maybe we get another Joel with his shirt off moment. But it's really about Susie for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm stunned. I'm really stunned by it in a way where it's like, I know some sitcoms, because this is sort of a sitcom, right? But they did pose it as a drama. But like the whole thing is that it's circular and it repeats.
And what's
over
stunning
and over.
Is that this was the thing, right? Like after all the ASP you've covered in your life, you know, this was supposed to be the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really does feel like they're just like.
I almost wonder if it's an episode or like a season order problem where it's like, well, you got five, but you only needed four. So if you combine the best of seasons four and season five in retrospect, are we going to look
Maybe.
Back on that and think like, oh, that should have been the season.
Maybe.
You didn't need all that runway for this frivolity and just kind of antics.
Yeah.
With all this stuff. The other thing that kind of stuck out to me from 405 as far as the story goes was I found the negotiation scene in which they try to offer Midge money to keep quiet about Shia Baldwin's sexuality to be very funny just because of Susie. I thought the implication that's like...
I thought that was really funny.
It was like, yeah, no, okay, we're sure we don't want the... You know, yeah, this is getting pretty interesting, you know, like all that stuff. But conversely too, Alice, it's so funny that I think our takeaway is supposed to be, look how loyal and how noble Midge is for not taking the money. She wouldn't take the hush money. She's not going to do it in the face of like these men trying to offer a thing to keep quiet about him being gay.
As somebody who wants to write and is writing, you know, right now, and like it's one of the things that scares me a lot. I mean, like, you know how like obviously one of the things that scares me a lot about writing is like doing a bunch of writing and having never. Like watching it never get made or never mm-hmm. get destroyed, which has happened a lot, but like, or, you know, doing a lot of writing for no reason. But like, one of the other things that scares me is like, what if you became really successful? Like, what if you finally got it, your mm-hmm. dream mm-hmm. show to be made that was your idea and you get to see it happen? And then what if it happened again and again? And like, what if you actually got to the point where you were like an Emmy winning writer and like, oh my God, what terrifies me maybe more than anything else is like getting to that point and not fucking having the self-awareness to know what reality is, what like the difference between yours, like where your story comes up against reality and like why it comes up against reality there. Like the idea that you're swimming around in this POV of this world and you're unable to understand how it interacts with the real world. It terrifies me that could happen to a person or is hap. I know it's like, it's not like Chuck Lorre ever had to have any relationship to reality. And there's a lot of writers who don't, but like for writers that like have this potential to have self-awareness and have really interesting points of view and tell really interesting stories. And then for them to see them get locked in this like kind of like really skewed worldview where, you know what I mean? Like, it's just literally like, hey, could you maybe read the room of the Earth in 2022 or even in 2018 or fuck 1980? Like, read the room of the world and understand that, like, centering a white woman in the story, it's just like, I don't know, it boggles the mind. Or like the fact that Midge is like, unable to change, unable to be wrong. You can't have a person unable to be wrong and then just do wrong things. So do they not know what wrong is? Like, and it's just like
such a funny question. Do they not know
crazy,
what wrong is?
You know?
I think, Alice, with this sort of show and this sort of creative team, this is always going to be the case for anyone of a certain age, over a certain age.
Let me finish though.
Over a certain age and over a certain success level in tax bracket, I still think that you really have to try hard to stay present in the world. You have to not get complacent. You have to be active and present. And we know people who are like that. People who are very successful and over a certain age. And it's not just, yeah, sure. Yeah, he could be amongst them. In the sense of like, oh, they're still operating from a sense of curiosity and not disappear. Because the thing about Maisel is that even speaking about the production design and the budget for that sort of thing, the show looks like what Amy's office has looked like for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And when you would watch making of documentaries on the Gilmore Girls DVDs, her office on the Warner lot, it's all pink lamps. And so this is, this is just auteur theory run amok of like, this is what it is. And they are less interested in engaging in a world that's moving on past them. And, you know, like, what is the moral imperative of that? I don't know. But it becomes, as Paul pointed out, like a little irresponsible when you start fucking around with these themes that do have real life effect.
It'd be really cool if ASP was going to do. I would have liked to see her do like a Firefly type show. Okay. You know how like Joss Whedon makes this show that's like, it's a space show, but it's really a Western. You know, I would like to see an ASP space show where like it's fast talking, you know, good time gals in space.
Oh, yeah.
Because then we don't have to deal with any of this shit. And she has this other world that she can examine where there's like, oh, the 60s. But, you know, like Star Trek would go back to the 60s all the time and it'd be like, you know, it'd be Earth, but it wasn't Earth. It was just some weird simulation. Mm-hmm. She could do that. And then we wouldn't have to deal with any of this stuff and we could just have fun.
I know, and filtered through that lens of aesthetic for her, the sort of dialogue and visual design would be interesting and cool.
It would be fascinating,
If, you know, post-season 5, whenever that comes out, she announces a new project and it's like, I'm doing a show set in the 1980s. It's about this brunette white fashion designer working in the, like, it's just, well, I don't know what the appetite or interest level is going to be. The story is told. And a lot of people spend their careers writing the same songs over and over again or making the same sort of movies over and over again. But usually they're iterative. There's like another dimension added to it. And this has been a very, unfortunately, and I know there's still people that love the show and enjoy it for its, you know, aesthetic pleasures, but it's been a very strange experience watching it and just like disappearing further and further into her mind and grasping for dimension and moral like handles, things you can get your hands around and kind of coming up nil with some of that stuff. It's actually kind of like troubling in a way where it's like,
yes,
is this it?
Yes.
The is this it of it all when you're 4 seasons into your blank check sort of show is fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's dystopian.
But again, we love this show. Thanks for listening, everybody. And, you know, follow us.
Like and subscribe.
At Gilmore Guys Show.
Like and subscribe.
Okay, 405, 405. 406, we can talk a little bit about. We can talk about May getting pregnant.
Who it is that she picked up in the big cliffy hangy at the end of 405.
Oh, sure. So she does see Lenny Bruce on the street. She takes him in. He's mad at her for it.
It looks like we're really going to kill Lenny Bruce, by the way.
I know. It does feel like that, right? Where there's sort of foreshadowing an overdose of, yeah. He
I think they're
going to
use it
street.
As a big plot point.
Can
and
you,
I'm like, okay.
Wow. That would be bold. And that would be
interesting. Now that the expectations for this show are firmly in the ground, maybe we can watch from a new lens of like, okay.
Like, what are you going to do?
Interesting. You know, because it's just like, you're not going to do anything like creatively astounding anymore. So...
I know. It's so sad. And it just feels like it's so easy to Monday morning quarterback it. But I just...
Oh, that's what I was thinking about last night when I couldn't sleep thinking about Ukraine. I was like, I am on a podcast criticizing this, like, this writer who I think is so, like, had so much potential. And, like, yet I cannot finish my screenplay. Like, it's so fucking fucked up. It's so fucked up.
I know, but you don't need to be able to carry a tune to say that you don't like a singer's voice.
That's
like,
good. That's a good point.
You know,
that's a good point.
That's always the case.
And I can't carry a tune.
So 406, we do find out that Joel's girlfriend May is pregnant. It's an unplanned pregnancy. Thank you, Amy, once again.
Great. She loves to.
She can't find
those.
A womb that she doesn't want to put a baby in. This
yeah, for somebody who hates kids.
Isn't that funny? Or it's like
she's kind of really like what the pro-life movement is these days. It's she's like she hates kids, doesn't care about them once they're born, but she's obsessed with pregnancy.
That's actually a hilarious point. That Amy is like the most right-wing television
obsessed
maker
with fetus.
In the 21st century.
Fetus everywhere. But once the kid's born, who gives a shit?
So who knows? I found that kind of heartbreaking because she had to say, I'm going to be a doctor over and over again. I found that kind of affecting. I like Stephanie Hsu, though, the woman who's playing May on the show, that sort of thing. I don't know if we're leading to, okay, this Asian woman is going to seek out an abortion in 1960s New York. I don't know.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, the other thing about that is that, like, I did like Stephanie Hsu when they were, I feel like a character's, the weight of a character's like circumstance is somewhat proportional to me. Like, I'm only going to care a certain amount if they get a certain amount of screen time, or maybe it's just the quality of the writing. But like, I feel this pregnancy plot line is very pushed on me, and her going, "I want to be a doctor," over and over again. Like, it just felt like, who is this? She wants to be a doctor.
It's sad.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, maybe she mentioned it a few times, but she's like 0.032% of this show. And I'm like, or 0.00, you know, however percent of this show. And it's like, it feels pushed upon me. It feels foisted upon me.
Much like the baby is being pushed upon her, foisted upon her.
Right.
As Paul pointed out, Hari Neff, the trans actress, plays Elroy Dunham.
Yes.
So it is revealed that the reporter, the journalist writing all that nasty shit about Midge is in fact a woman, not a man. Because my assumption going into it, especially because we haven't seen Milo Ventimiglia's character, is like, oh, he's going to be
that
Elroy
was gonna be
Dunham.
Him. Yeah.
They're going to have some sort of face-off, but I guess we'll see. Whatever they're doing with them in the next two episodes. But this all leads to this contrived thing where Midge is hard up for money. The fridge lights out. She has a lot of debt. And so Sophie has an appearance on the... I keep wanting to call him Gordon Ramsay. It's Gordon Ford. It's the Gordon Ford talk show. She does really well. She essentially invents podcasting where she does a vulnerable interview where there's some laughs, but also she's like, but yeah, I'm an addict and it's really hard.
Okay. I don't think that's podcasting.
No, that's podcasting. No, okay. It's everyone going on Marin and being like, actually, I, you know, tried to kill myself or whatever. Does that. Then she gets her own talk show based on that one guest show appearance.
Yeah, we're led to believe.
You remember the very handsome boy who played Gordon Ford's producer on the show?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That guy. Mike?
Yeah, maybe Mike Parr Mike. Or whatever his
Mike.
Name is.
Mike Parr. Mike. Yeah, Susie Mike, was Mike, following Mike. Him in the hall. Mike.
He's played by a gentleman named Jason Ralph.
That guy's really hot.
Do you know who he's married to?
No, gimme.
Rachel Brosnahan.
Rachel Brosnahan.
Yep.
Nice.
It's a good-looking couple. Okay, girl. Jesus. So, yeah, he's in these two episodes. And he was strikingly handsome in a way. You know where people are hot in a way where it's like, whoa. Ugh.
Yep. No, exactly. So, in the scene, like there is a scene in this show, and it's not a spoiler, in Resident Alien coming up in season two, where this guy runs out naked from a house. He's not a main character. So, he was cast. And he has to run out in front of the car as I and Asta are driving. And we didn't, like, it's just, it's he's a tertiary, like, character that, of a tertiary story. So we hadn't seen him before. And he walks out in the middle of the night when we're shooting this scene. And he's, like, takes off his coat and, like, stands in front of the headlights of our car. And we were just looking at something, like, we were looking at our sides or something. And we both looked up and we're like, oh, my God. He was so hot. Like, glistening body, just like perfect eyes, just like, and he had a mask on, you know, because it's COVID, and so we could only see his eyes, his piercing eyes, and it's just like the way he was like looking up into the light too, and like there was like wind, and it was just like, why? Like, it didn't make any sense that this person should be like the handsomest guy, and we, like, the minute we saw him, it was just like, oh, and Sarah started laughing and crying at the same time because it was so shocking. She couldn't. She's like, oh, my God. It was just. Yeah, there's something about when men are handsome. I was trying to explain this to Garrett in a certain way that's just like, what? Like, baffling. And it just makes you laugh.
It's troubling in a way, almost. That's so funny. Yeah, well. Yes. And yes, I would count Jason Ralph as a part of that. So that's
yes.
That's the whole machination. Susie gets Lynn in on the show. She gets a talk show. And then she says, hey, Midge, I really need Sophie to be my manager. You're the only one that could convince her. So I'm going to give you a freaking good gig as a warm-up. Basically the Jimmy Pardo of Let's Count or Make It Count or whatever it's called. The Minutes Count. And it did strike me while watching this part of it. Mm-hmm. This is what Midge should be doing. She is a good warm-up comic because her whole thing is extemporaneous, kind of basic crowd work, but
crowd work, yeah,
obviously very charming.
Yes,
and doing herself, she's great at that. And that was one of the first times in a while I'd seen her performing the comedy in a way where it's like, yeah, I totally get that. That's what.
Yeah,
that's basically what it would be.
It's certainly the best written comedy that. And the most believable of the show when she's doing that kind of thing.
Do you remember when we were recording our first episode of the season over 401 and 402, where we talked about?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, I'm gonna remind you that we talked about that digression where Susie meets this magician man in a bar, and we're like, well, you know, I'm sure he'll be very important later on in the series. So it turns out the magician man, as played by Gideon Glick, Broadway star, is very important in the series for some reason. He is all over this show in a way that's like, all right, you know, he's interesting. He's a weird performer. He's compelling.
Very ASPism, I feel like, to cast somebody who's just a really weird. He's like a human Slim Jim. Like, that happens a lot.
There was a Palladinoism that we missed in one of our last episodes. You remember the whole debate over the sketch show or the play at the Catskills where everyone was berating Midge. For not doing a good job.
Oh, yeah.
That is Rory in the Living Festival of Living Art, where it's like, you flinch. No, I didn't flinch. You flinch. Yeah, you flinch.
Oh, my God.
They did it again. It's so interesting. A lot of listeners,
I like it better on this show.
Yes. And then Jackie's funeral was much like the funeral Luke had for his dad or someone else. I forget. There was a funeral for no one also in Gilmore that I'd forgotten about that. Listeners reminded us of. So thank you, listeners.
Oh, wow, listeners. Way to go.
I know.
God damn.
So I think it is time to... wait, actually, before I get to the meat and potatoes of what I want to talk about, we do have to talk about this, Alice.
You missed the show. There should be a way to pause this. Like, you have a separate box recording the picture and sound simultaneously. It should be able to rewind, too.
Okay, so we've talked about a lot of things on this show. We've talked about strengths, weaknesses, beautiful things, things that didn't work for us, great performances that were just okay, episodes that were bad, episodes that astounded us. I think this is the worst thing that's ever happened on the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. that Abe...
When you were watching it, were you covering your face?
Yes. That Abe forecast the DVR's invention?
It's so...
What are we doing?
Yeah. I mean...
It's the Picasso joke in Titanic. Like, Pablo who? He's never going to make it. Like, that sort of shit is...
Okay, but like, wait. Yeah. So, what did you expect?
What do you mean? I didn't expect from for there to be a TiVo joke in 1960.
On an ASP show written from the past? Yeah.
I guess just because they've never had... But they've never had the opportunity to do anachronisms like that where it's like, I wish there was a rectangle where I could listen to all my music or something.
A
like,
rectangle.
You know, like, or, you know, they would have no concept of it at the time. But I was very surprised by it.
I don't know. I feel like maybe they haven't done it because you're a much more meticulous keeper tracker of this stuff. But I feel like this show does that all the time.
I feel like it does. There's little inferences to it or like, you know, Bob Dylan who, you know, that
yes.
sort of shit. But yeah. This is such a... Like, I even get it. Even the Pablo Picasso thing, it's like, well, that's a guy that exists, and they're saying he's not going to be successful, but little do they know he is. But he's like, he's just kind of doing jazz on inventing technology in a way that I thought was incredibly distracting. Also, I don't love, to Paul's point about, like, really enjoying Maren Hinkle and Tony Shalhoub, I don't love how they become just like little doy, empty headed, like, we love Sophie Lennon, you know. It's so clear to me that this is how Amy perceives her own parents in her own life of like, yes. Yeah, they don't fucking get it. They don't fucking support me. Like,
they like my enemies.
Yeah. And it's everyone's for or against me. So anyway, there's all that stuff.
Yeah, that's really cynical and I hate it.
Sophie gives Mitch the opportunity. Mitch blows it. Can't wait to see how that all goes down the next two episodes. But let's clear the decks, Alice. We've been very cynical. We've been very whatever about a lot of this, and rightfully so. But listen, I alluded to this earlier in the episode. I had a tough night last night. I was up very late.
I know.
It was very emotional.
I'm so sorry that I did this fucking early call for you. I didn't mean to. I didn't know.
It's okay. I didn't know at the time either that I'd be up till 4:15. No. But here's my mental state. I get 2.5 hours sleep, wake up, have things to do. I get on my Peloton because I am a psycho who does have a Peloton with a desk attachment so I can put my laptop on it and watch stuff while I'm doing Peloton. Because you can't watch it on the screen. Yeah, I think
it's... Kind of need that for my life. Okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
It's great. And I'm watching this episode. I meant to finish it all last night. I ran out of time before, you know, so this is early morning, 7:30, finishing 4:06, clipping it out, making the supercuts, all the clips. I'm watching this episode, and we get to this scene.
What my daughter does has nothing to do with my business.
Business? What do you know about business? Matchmaking isn't a business. It's a tradition going back decades, centuries.
Kelly, motherfucking Bishop, is back on my TV screen. And I will say, I think maybe just because of the last 12 hours of my life, I had such an emotional reaction to it.
Oh.
I thought this kind of digression, it's like, who cares about... You know, Rose's matchmaking thing. I thought this digression was so funny. It completely worked for me. The casting of the mafia. The mafia. Jackie Hoffman, Marceline Hugot, which people might know as Kathy Geist from 30 Rock, or she was also on The Leftovers. She's in like everything. She's one of those that people.
Mm-hmm.
Patrice Johnson. And then Kelly Bishop as Benedetta, who is running a mafia type organization of matchmaking women in the 1960s New York. They have territories mapped out.
Yeah.
There's a whole underground of it. All of this was like very touching to me in a way of like just the meta text of, oh, this is like, you know, this is what I care about the most. That was my favorite character on that show originally. And Kelly Bishop. And it's like, oh, you know what? You know, as bitter and cynical as I can feel and sound like about the show, there are still these moments of like little transcendence where it's like, oh, you know what? I'm still enjoying this. And
so much so that I would say one of the strengths of ASP is that she'll create these vignettes that are so compelling and so unique. I would watch that show 100%. The mafia of like weird elder lady of New York 1960 matchmakers. I mean, that's an amazing concept for a show.
Fucking awesome. Like, It
fucking
ruled.
Awesome.
It ruled so hard. And again, I love all those actresses too. Not even just Kelly, but like
I really wish the next project for ASP would be a smaller budget. Just because I really think the bigger budget is hurting her. A smaller budget and a spinoff of one of these ideas. Like, do the show about the in-laws. Do the show about the weird family. Or do the show about just the summer camp, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. Just do a spinoff about one of these worlds that she's kind of like mini worlds that she's created, because there's richer stuff there and you don't need to have such a broad view of the time. Like, or maybe tell the story of the 60s from the perspective of a woman who's actually in
60 years
the age
old.
Bracket that ASP is. You know what I mean? Yes, like, yes, so yes. It isn't just like a young, cause it's so unrealistic that like Midge and her friends wouldn't have any awareness of like whiteness versus blackness in 1960. It's just like so weird.
Sure.
Like, and like, even if their awareness was that like, yeah, being white is better. But like, we obviously are supposed to think that Midge is like anti-racist in some way, right?
Because look,
she hangs out with black people and it's fine. Or like, she goes to Susie and she's like, I don't care what you are, I'm cool. And it's like, no, you're not.
Yeah, we didn't talk about this, but there was a certain optic of, I know that the whole thing was supposed to be slapstick, but these white women coming to a predominantly black wedding and then just slapping shit out of people's hands.
Horrible.
It felt very weird.
It was ugly.
Yeah.
Like, it was, that to me was like, this is a really ugly moment. Mm-hmm. And could possibly be like legitimately triggering for viewers who are black who have, you know, I mean, you can't do anything while black in this country still. So like a wedding in the 60s where white people just walk in and start hitting things, like, yeah, that's not going to be about something other than racism. If you didn't have the context, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just gross. Bizarre. It was just fucking gross.
But all that said, fucking the mafia matchmaking matrons of
amazing
Manhattan, or whatever you want to call it, the marvelous matchmaking matrons of Manhattan, incredible to me. And the recasting of, like, listen, it's been Kelly Bishop since Gilmore Girls: Colony Year in the Life has had one other credit. She was in one episode of Halston, this Ewan McGregor Netflix show that I don't know anyone who watched it. Actually, I think Paul watched it because he tweeted about it one time. Halston. But this is, you know, she's just living her life in New Jersey now. She doesn't come out unless, you know, Amy calls, I suppose. It's so satisfying 6 years later to see this, where it's like, Amy's not giving her the same old shit to do too, where it's like, oh no, yep, you'll play like a mean old lady or a disapproving grandma.
Yeah,
it's
like,
now you're a crime lord.
Like, yeah.
Emily Gilmore is a crime lord in 1960s Manhattan. Come on. That's great.
Yeah, let's LFG.
I've missed literally that voice, like literally her voice. And she's a little, obviously she's older than she was 6 years ago.
You got a clip?
Yeah, let me find a fucking clip. I think we need
to. Yeah, like, maybe because it's my fucking ringtone.
Yeah, I know. It was hard not to just play the whole thing. But yes, here we go. Let's cue it up.
It's like the Girl Scouts without the annoying camping element.
Ooh, the herring is so nice today.
So tell me, Benedetta, what exactly is your business?
Me? Oh, I help people.
So noble.
I help them find each other. I help them fall in love. I help them get married.
You sound like a matchmaker.
Miss M, what is your business?
Well, I am what I like to call a matrimonial matron, otherwise known as a matchmaker.
Geeta, what about you?
Matchmaker, pass the mustard.
Molly?
I'm a nurse part-time, and I teach clogging on the weekends. I'm kidding. I'm a matchmaker.
What about you, Rose Weissman?
Well, I'm also a matchmaker.
And how long have you been a matchmaker, Rose Weissman?
You know, Rose is fine.
Rose Weissman has not answered my question.
And she also hasn't passed the mustard.
Well, I'm relatively new to the game, a few months.
You seem to be doing very well for yourself in such a short time.
Beginner's luck.
Uh-huh. Have you ever seen a dog try to eat the kibble out of another dog's dish, Rose Weissman?
Thankfully, no.
It's ugly.
Very.
A dog has one dish. He shouldn't have to share his kibble with anyone.
Ladies, I think there's been a misunderstanding.
So you're not working as a matchmaker?
Well, yes, I am. But I assure you, I'm not trying to eat the kibble out of anyone's dish.
You bagged the Melamed girls.
Melamed's my territory.
I don't understand.
Manhattan is divided up into territories. It's the only way to keep the peace after the wars.
The wars?
You don't want to know about the wars.
Lost a lot of good ladies in the wars.
However, once everyone got their peace, the wars stopped.
Now we each have our territory. Little Italy, Lower East Side.
Upper Manhattan, Harlem, Washington Heights.
West End, Midtown, Hell's Kitchen.
Jews are everywhere, but I stick to the Jews, and Melamed's a Jew.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't know about the territories.
You got our letter, didn't you?
What letter? The letter that you ignored.
The one that said stop.
Oh, that letter, yes, I did get it. I just didn't understand it.
You didn't understand stop?
It's one word.
What are you, an idiot?
No, I understand it now.
Good.
But ladies, really, New York is such a big city. Surely there's enough business to go around.
I don't think you've been listening to us.
That's the...
You are not welcome. You are intruding. You are competition that we do not need or want. Now, we are ladies. And as ladies, we wanted to give you a chance.
If you had pulled this stunt out in Staten Island, all that would have been left to you is that hat. And I don't want to tell you what they would have done to the hat.
Fucking love it.
Terrific. And Bishop's ability to be like, yeah, okay, I'll be the godfather. I'll be Corleone. Yeah. 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 Sign me up. And just flawlessly.
Oh, yeah. Flawlessly. I love that hat too.
Ooh, baby. And then... You know, a bunch of other
fun
stuff
for
happens.
You.
Yeah, I know. That was a nice little gift for me.
Full boner on the Peloton?
Half, you know, out of respect. I mean, she's still, man, it's crazy. The last time I saw her in person was when Demi and I went to that Gilmore Girls premiere.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember she was there with something. She was leaving and she was like, oh, okay, so nice to see you. And she gave me a little kiss on the cheek. And that was 6 years ago. It's been so long. Since
you've kissed.
Yeah, since I've kissed Kelly Bishop. I think it's time we should probably transition to some Twitter Q&A.
Tweet, tweet.
Okay, so we got there a lot of good ones. I think people are sensing the sort of what of this season.
Yeah.
Gabriella says, what is this show about? I seriously don't know anymore. Bonnie says, is there anybody left that's not hate watching at this point? And I'm not hate watching. I'm really not. I don't hate this
show. I love this girl.
Bonnie.
Have her on the show.
I know. John writes in, did Midge invent the mic drop? Because she does do a sort of anachronistic at the end of her weird competition of one-upsmanship with Sophie Lennon.
No question.
At the warm-up.
According to ASP, I'm sure she invented everything.
She invented hip-hop in Brooklyn.
Yes, she invented rap.
Now, what you hear is not a test. I'm rapping to the beat. Or whatever.
Hip-hop. It started out in the park. People speaking their language to you. Like, just, ugh.
Rebecca says, and she's the one that flagged that quote about anger and revenge. Rebecca says, do you think this full circle bathroom moment with Shia Baldwin is the last we'll see of him? Or do those sad glimpses of him by himself lead to more? Now, the thing is,
I fucking hope so.
When intuitively you think, clearly this character's story is over on this show, Amy's like,
that's
true.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good
more.
Point.
So,
yeah.
Who the hell knows?
I fucking don't know. I mean, the greatest thing that could possibly happen is that, like, Shy murders Midge.
Can you imagine? That'd be a good finale. And then finally, we'll leave it at this one.
Gets away with it.
A girl has no name.
Because he's like, and then, like, the guys who run Shy's business, like, see her body and they throw a bunch of cash on her and they say, you should have taken the money, kid, on her dead body and walk away.
Wow.
And that's the
end. And then it cuts to the credits and some zombie song written and directed by Amy Sherman-Palladino.
And it's like, zombie.
Oh, it's the cranberry zombie. Yeah. Yeah, not the zombie.
Yeah.
A girl's no name on Twitter says, why not have Imogene be the secretary for Susie's business? Seems like an obvious choice since they seem to be looking for ways to keep Imogene in the show. And that is weird, right?
That is weird. Because she has to be a secretary for
Abe?
Abe?
It feels like an easy fit. Like, Susie's looking for secretary. Imogene has all these skills now. I mean,
oh,
yes.
That's so bizarre. And yeah, I actually honestly think they didn't put it together. But I enjoy the new secretary, Dinah.
She's fun, right? Like, the joke is her hyper-competence.
It's also her, like, she has hyper-competence, but she's also, like, well-meaning goofball energy that ASP likes to write. Like, she's got the, like,
yes,
the line one. It's on line one. Well, there's not a line one. There's only one line. So she's like, I know, but it makes you sound important. I am important. Well, I want people to know it. You know, like,
yeah,
I laughed out loud at that.
I know the Susie stuff.
I want people to know it.
Again, if it's Susie at work, a day in the office with her weird magician, even like the card trick thing where it was the visual gag of like card tricks and then, you know, which is, you know, all that stuff was very funny and well staged. And actually to that point, Kate says, do you think that in the scene where Midge asks why Susie has jam on her shirt and Susie said it was from one of the secretary's children, it was a subtle nod. This is quite a theory. It was a subtle nod from ASP to let you know she's listening. Seems like they intentionally threw a Palladinoism in. And of course, Kate is referring to Luke being freaked out by children because they have jam on their hands. They always have little jam hands and jam and bam. And yes, I think in her mind, in Amy's mind, children love jam. And it's the only thing they touch.
I think they excrete it in her head.
Yeah, maybe she thinks it's not pee, but just jam comes out. Why is there so much jam?
There's this TikTok I sent to Garrett of like a little kid with a flashlight, like an infant with a flashlight pointing it on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then a pug chasing the light. And the kid is like, in a diaper, you know, but the child is scream laughing, you know, and it's like so cute, this kid. And so I sent it to Garrett and he goes, all these parents showing their kids adorable laughter, you know, they're not showing the full story. And the way I read it was like, I was like, does he know something about what's going on with these TikTok parents? Like, it sounded like he was referring to some sort of dark underbelly.
Like he was about
TikTok.
To expose a Pizzagate like conspiracy.
Yes. Yes, but he just meant parenting is hard.
Goodness.
Sorry, that was a fun aside that you can cut out.
No. Grace, keep it in, double it, and then play it at the beginning and the end of the episode.
Obviously. It's all gold.
Wow. Okay, well, you know, aside from the matchmaking ladies, these two episodes weren't...
Those are the only tweets? Did we address the last one, or did I just interrupt?
The jam hands, I will respond to Kate and say, I don't believe Amy Sherman-Palladino has ever listened to a podcast. So definitely not listening to this one. No, I don't think she threw it in it. You know, and it's like a volume thing too. She probably wrote, what, the jam hands joke 15 or 17 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what Alice and I said 5 days ago on the podcast.
That's true.
So you're probably not going to remember what you wrote 16 or 17 years ago. And it's funny how those things come out. I mean, that's the whole premise with Sorkinisms. It's like, yeah, if you're operating at that volume, you're going to repeat yourself a lot.
Mm.
As we probably have on this show as well. Wow. Okay. Two more episodes to go. As of recording this, once again, they are out today. I will probably watch them today.
Me too.
And then
TBH.
Rewatch them for our little season 4 finale next week. Only one more episode to go. Maybe something insane will happen and Paul will get mad about it and want to come back on.
Yeah. I'm gunning for something insane to happen. I really hope something insane happens.
Let's make a forecast.
Okay.
Where do we want it to go? So Midge has pissed off Sophie again. Susie's trying to get her on the Gordon Ford show, pitching her to her husband.
Oh, and can I just talk about that scene?
Yeah.
I hated that scene. Hated
Which
that
line?
Scene. The Sophie Susie comedy off.
Yes.
That to me, I fucking hated it. Again, you know, this show wants to be grounded and like about certain things, and it's just so dumb to watch two people. Like, first of all, Sophie, who is she? What is Sophie? we're watching Sophie this whole time being like, now we're rooting for Sophie. She's kind of got us on her side, and she went to a crazy jail and then came back and was like, okay, now I really want Susie to be my manager. I see in Susie something that she sees in me, yada yada yada, whatever. And so she's making all these strides and we're like starting to see more of her personality, and then she just immediately, her ego gets bruised by, I don't know, it's just stupid. Like, it was just like, oh, she has the wherewithal to go on a television show, be vulnerable and talk about her fucking breakdown, but she can't have the wherewithal to not go on stage with her warm-up comic. That's crazy.
It's
like, that's
odd,
fucking
behavior.
Nuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and even watching this season, I literally forgot, Alice, that Sophie Lennon from Queens was a character, and then she was outed as being a rich. I forgot that happened. I was like, wasn't she always
rich? They could
have
accomplished the same that they accomplished, not knowing what happens later. Sorry to interrupt. I'm just still heated. They could have accomplished the same thing by Sophie going out and being like, okay, thanks, that's been the warm-up comic, I'm going up on stage now. And then Midge is like, okay. And then, like, you know, we didn't need to go through that whole stupid thing where these two people who do this for a living. It's like seeing two people who support cement for a living, like voluntarily sink in cement.
Like,
it just doesn't make any sense.
Mud. Yeah.
Sorry. I'm screaming at you and interrupting you. That's I love you. I respect you.
Well, as long as you respect me, you don't have to love me.
I pray
me,
for you.
And I pray for you every night and for your salvation. Finale predictions. What do you want? Do you want to see Benedetta again? What do you want for Milo? Do you want him and Midge to kiss? Do you want Lenny and Midge to kiss? What are we
Lenny
looking for?
I want Lenny and Milo to kiss.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
I want Joel to deliver
May's baby
in a subway car that's like the subway kind of goes down, and so Midge has to like Joel has to deliver May's baby with the help of the good people of New York City on the subway car, and it's just like, what's happening? I would also like it to become a different show. Real predictions. I would say Midge goes on the Gordon thing. You know what else I do love is all the burlesque sequences. I think they're awesome.
Yeah, there was a listener that wrote in and said it was nice that they were using women of different kinds of body types for the burlesque.
Well, also
dancers.
Like real burlesque performers, like that window washing one, like that woman does that for a living, no question. You know what I mean?
I didn't know that. How'd you know that?
I don't know it, but watch it.
Okay.
That's not somebody who's like...
I kind of shield my eyes during that point.
Okay, Kevin.
Just for purity's sake.
It's fantastic. And like these are, I'm sure some of them at least are professionals and I love it.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about that. We're like the club is making money. It's a problem. Midge wants a larger cut, blah, blah, blah. Well, we'll see. We'll see in the next two episodes.
I was actually like loving the scenes of Boise just getting mad that women are laughing.
He's so mad at women having a good time.
I'm enjoying, and I just enjoy watching a man get mad about it. It's like, that to me is just like, I love it. I'll always watch that.
Also, a little housekeeping. We know his name is not old Josh. It's old Greg, because we did identify him as
old
Josh.
Oh, shit. You're right. Josh is the... Right. Sorry.
You called him new Josh initially, so you were wrong on both counts.
And it's old Greg. Shit.
Oh, gracious. All right. Two more episodes of season four. One more episode of Maisel Goy's coming at you this season. And then maybe four more episodes of season five next year. We'll see. So wow. I mean, I feel a little emotionally drained after that. You know,
I think you just feel normal drained because you worked out after not sleeping.
Yeah, that might be it. And then we can talk about everything else off mic. But I love you. And
Grace, keep recording.
Grace Harper, Grace. Please keep Grace. Recording.
All right, I love you too.
Okay, and we'll go out with. I was going to say, one of my little things was, as much as I love the music on this show, I do think the needle drops are almost like painfully on the nose, where it's like, they're in a fight. What's the song we play? I don't know. Why can't we be friends?
Yeah. Don't talk back. But up, up, up.
Yeah. Or the Gordon Show. Let's play a song about TV's good or whatever.
Yaggity yak.
All right. And we'll see you next week for one last episode of season four of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goy. Goodbye. Thank you and good night.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.